keeps cities or fire districts from setting up some sort of reward system for their volunteers on their own. They were trying to find a way for a state system to administer it. And PERS, the more they thought about it, the less they liked the idea.
Mr. Chair.
I don't know if that answers your question, but...
It confuses me.
Well...
Mr. Chair, what they were...
That's Dominic.
What they were looking for, representing therefore, was a way... what the volunteer firefighters were looking for was a way to calculate their time so that they find a way of getting into the PERS system. Currently, there's no tracking system to say how many years you have of service. And they were wanting to connect this into it to show their years of service, to be able to show what years are qualified under PERS. This doesn't really do it, but the new language wasn't going to do it either. So I don't know, maybe addressed in another legislative assembly, but
Yeah, in fact, you may be in the next interim having PERS come in and say, take lines 30 through 38 out totally of the law, because volunteer firefighters really, really aren't employees, and you can't kick money into their system or redefine what an employee is, and I don't know if anybody wants to do that.
Independent contractor.
Yeah. Maybe the time to do that is take it out right now.
Well, I'm not they talked about that, but they didn't come up with it, and I'm not comfortable with doing that without more input from them.
Can't believe that volunteer firefighters should become part of the PERS system. When that starts happening, I guess we might as well ask everybody to be able to join.
Well, they haven't, because the board has evidently always found that they, or I don't know if I honestly don't know if anybody's
applied.
Maybe
we should ask somebody from the board whether they qualify or not, because they want it out if they don't. Or if they do.
Bob Andrews is here if you want to
ask. Is there a PERS representative?
Yeah, Bob Andrews is here, I think.
Bob?
Morning, Mr. Chair, committee members.
I'm Bob Andrews, PERS, Manager of Membership and Coverage.
Would you talk to us about line 30 through 38, page 3, and what that is about?
As best as I can, Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, there was an earlier thought, as had been expressed, of providing some type of a length of service award. Volunteer firefighters in other parts of the law are specifically excluded from definition of employees for any benefit structure. Were the board to ever consider them, they would not be considered as a police and fire classic, because they're specifically excluded from that in other parts of the statute. And there was some thought of a length of service award. There are some departments that are now purchasing this, I believe, through private carriers. We have not been involved in it. One of the concerns that the former director and our actuaries have of trying to track this, and the implications that were we even to consider it, that as, quote, members of the system, there would be all the other ancillary type of benefits that may otherwise have been available. There had been subsequent discussions with the director and the board, and an evaluation of the implications of even considering what is here, and it was determined that that was not something that was either complementary to the system or something that we administratively would want to even become involved in. The fiscal impact that we submitted was based on the fact that we would not become involved in this. It would have to be completely reevaluated were we to get into this, because you have a whole spectrum of programs that could be advanced under this.
I cannot
speak for what I thought I heard earlier. The question as to what the board's position is, I was not privy to those discussions. I think they would like to come back and redress the issue that was brought up about possible future deletion of that entire section, but I cannot speak specifically for the board on that.
In your mind, do we do anything if we take it out now?
If we take it out, Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, if we take it out now, we're back to square one, which is where we are now.
Which is where I think
correct, sir.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Dolman.
Representative Johnson, in our subcommittee, Pat came in at our first meeting and forwarded the amendment that took this put the language back where it was. And at that point, she said that they would be comfortable with leaving the language in there. That's what she had told our subcommittee. So, I mean, we can still take it out. I'm just saying she was comfortable at that point. This was a couple of months ago. I don't think anything's changed since then. But she was comfortable with just going back to the original language.
That's what she wanted.
That's what she wanted to do, is go back to the original language, which takes out the boldface and puts back...
Which we have an amendment.
Which we have an amendment.
We have an amendment to do that.
That's correct.
We do have that amendment.
Okay, fine. Okay.
Thank you, Tom. Max,
shall I continue?
Just brief, quickly
as quick as I
walk
can
through this thing.
All right, let's go to page page 14. Takes out some language that is no longer needed as far as how the succession of benefits goes. It would drop to another a new current section and be taken care of that way. Just the housekeeping. Page 16 has a change on it. That has to do with the first benefit payment. This, we're back to the 60 days of first benefit payment again, a conforming. Page 17. Oh, major change there is down in line 37, and I guess it kicks over onto page 18, lines 1 through 7. State and local employers... currently, in the collection of past due contributions, it standardizes what that shall be. And if over on page 18 it says any public employer delinquent in making reports or supplying information concerning its employees in the manner required by the board shall be charged a penalty of the lesser of $2,000 or 1% of the total annual contributions for each month or fraction thereof during which the employer is delinquent. Currently, as I understand it, PERS is allowed to charge 1% of the total annual contributions if a public employer is delinquent in making a report or supplying information concerning its employees. And some of the bigger payrolls, if you were late a fraction of a month, 1% of the payroll of the total annual contributions could be a huge amount of money. And so we don't look very closely at late filings, would be my assumption. This would say they're going to get fined $2,000 or 1% of the total annual contributions, whichever is less.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Durfler?
It seems kind of odd that we find agencies within the government. I don't quite understand. It's kind of like putting in one pocket and taking out of another. I don't. Does this happen a lot, or it's kind of an odd.
Finding each other.
Yeah.
Well, you have to, Representative Driffle. I can speak to that. The PERS is the pension program for these employers. Mm-hmm. Just as in the private sector, you may have a pension plan for your employees. And those pensions have those the pension plan has to be, they have to have the money, and so it's not like two agencies, one finding another agency. I look at the PERS program as the pension program. I know in mine, in ERISA, in the private sector, is quite explicit about late filings, and I know our employers. They fine each other. They do. They call them in. If you're late with your report, 5 days late, you get a letter. You have to. The employer shows up in front of a board of other employers, and they fine him or her for late reports and payments. So it's certainly not unique, but it's curious.
Yeah, I'll grant you that.
Question: these fines go back into the PERS fund, I take it.
I assume that. I don't know.
Yes.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yes, it does.
Well, I think that it sounds to me like this is sort of an internal check and balance that the integrity of any pension fund depends on equal contribution and equal distribution. And if one employer or one contributor is not performing, it's sort of not carrying their weight, and it costs everybody else. And this is just a way to make sure that the public, that one public agency doesn't cost other public agencies more. So the public is sort of self-policing. And that's why I ask, if the fine goes back into the fund, then it basically restores equity within the fund and treats all the public equally. So I think that it's appropriate that the public fine itself, if nothing else, so that we don't get one rogue government ruining it for the rest of it.
Well,
line six.
There's all kinds of good reasons.
Penalties.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Sure. Line six. Penalties and other charges so paid shall be used by the board in paying administrative expenses of the system.
See, so I think that's so level battlefield.
Representative Belmont, I guess just a comment that, you know, local government agencies have all kinds of problems when administrations change. Maybe they don't like the chief clerk or something like that that they have. And those kinds of things create the kinds of problems you're talking about, because there isn't a firm structure in many small governments to ensure that the accounting is done. My wife worked a bit of time as an auditor keeping accounts for an accounting firm, and what she encountered was they're all over the map with stuff. They don't feel as compelled to be timely as private sector as you did in your business. And it's common practice that you see in the audits of substantial failure to comply with timely reporting.
I guess I understand the problem. The thing I object to is they're using my tax dollars to pay fines, somebody ought to be responsible besides the taxpayer, I guess.
It's retirement funds.
Yeah, I understand that.
The other point, follow up, I don't want to belabor this, but Representative Edmondson's correct. When you have a delinquent reports and contributions, you are in fact hurting the rest of the group because of the interest income that is not being generated, which is a significant part of the PERS system. Representative Mannix.
As a follow-up to Representative Durfer's comment, I agree that, in effect, someone's using tax dollars to pay fines. Whatever entity had to use their tax dollars to pay fines is, in effect, making up for the damage, as the chairman pointed out, that has been done to others because of their failure to perform. Plus, I dare suggest that if such a levy or a penalty is imposed or if money is withheld, some individual who is responsible for this misdeed is going to be on the carpet and may well not be in the employment of that or on the sidewalk. Right now, they might just quietly send in that late payment and nobody hears about it. But if they send in the late payment and then they get word that there's a penalty being imposed, all of a sudden the alarm bells have gone off. I'd add, in terms of structure, corporate structure, if someone in my law firm did something wrong as part of their work, I'm going to own up for it, pay for it out of my own law firm money, take care of the problem as terms of a corporate operation. Now, internally, I'll deal with the problem, but in terms of dealings with others, I'm responsible for what the people in my operation do. And I'd say the same is true for any taxing entity, any public body. They're responsible for what their employees do. The employees then are responsible to their supervisors for what they do.
What this will do is highlight in an audit. That would show us a note that says the failure to pay these caused the following penalties to occur. If you don't think that doesn't highlight the issue, you should go to a meeting where that is discussed.
Especially in six.
And all that federal government does it to local and state governments all the time.
Yeah.
The EPA.
Yeah, that's for sure. Go ahead, Max.
There are just, as I recall, there are two things more lines in page 18, lines 32, page 19, line 4, and page 20, line 9, all the same change. Evidently there had been some confusion as to who was eligible to continue health insurance. It says beneficiary. It's been changed to spouse or dependent, and it clarifies that the spouse or dependent of a deceased retiree is eligible to continue group health insurance after the retiree's death.
Got it, Max?
Except for the amendments.
Okay, why don't we go to the amendments.
Amendments, the dash one amendments, Representative Witte very eloquently described what it does.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, are we in work session?
Yes, we are in work session.
I would move the dash one amendment.
Representative Dominey moves the dash one amendment. Any discussion?
Yeah, I didn't understand that eloquence. I guess if we had to take a civics quiz here, I'd be the only one to fail, but I...
What happens...
Go ahead, Max.
...is if you're a legislator and you're already retired under the PERS system... if you retire from PER and you retire from the system, you're allowed 60 days after that from SEB to elect onto their health insurance plan. Okay.
And you pay for that.
And you pay for that.
Okay.
You start paying.
Right.
In this case, if you're retired...
But you don't pay much. Didn't we pass a bill out that limited the amount you had to pay or something?
It's a pretty decent sized premium because you're retired. It's a health premium. The bill we passed out was to level it up so that it's not so much as it was.
Okay.
But the process would be then, okay, I'm retired. I'm also retired and I'm a legislator. I get health insurance.
All right.
All right. But within 60 days, because I retired from this other job, within 60 days I have to make a choice into the other system.
Okay.
And what this would do is say, I don't have to make a choice now because I'm getting health insurance. But as soon as my legislative
tenure
history
For whatever reason,
from that point when I'm disqualified or what, then I have 60 days
to go back to the
original.
To go back and choose.
Exactly.
You didn't say
that.
Excuse me, gentlemen.
One more question, Max. Maybe it doesn't pertain to this, but what happens if you have never had a state job? You're just an elected legislator. What happens then when you leave office? Does this deal with that at all?
No.
You get $11.
Well, it does, Mr. Chairman. It all it says is that if you retire from PERS and your legislative time ends and you've served here a number of years and you retire from PERS, you still have the 60 days to make the election and get into the SEBV.
So this says that legislators can opt in within 60 days.
Yeah, this bill.
Is that any change from the way?
The only thing that this thing deals with is for those legislators that retire while they're still legislators and continue in office and start drawing PERS benefits. That's the only people that it deals with. And right now, there's only one of those. But there's Representative Cease is in that position. Representative Hostica. I have PERS history. There are a number of other people that have PERS.
Possibilities.
Wouldn't it only apply though to those that had public employee employment?
Yeah, prior to the time they came in.
Yes, that's what I answered.
Senator Gold, others, a bunch.
Got it. No. Please.
I think we got it clarified.
Representative Edmondson and Manning.
I have a couple of questions. Perhaps Representative Whitley could answer them. I'm serious. I don't understand all this PERS stuff, so I want to ask these questions now. If you retire before you are elected to the legislature, so that you've already made your election to go into SEB, and then, lo and behold, you become a legislator, do you have to continue paying your SEB payments while you're a legislator, or would this take care of that?
Doesn't take care of that.
Okay. And what if a person retires on PERS and elects their SEB payments and then decides to go out of retirement and either become a public employee again or take another job?
You can't do that. Once you retire, you're retired.
Well, let's say a police officer...
You can't unretire.
Not in a PERS system.
If you are started to receive monthly checks as a PERS retiree, that's it.
Okay. Well, I mean, you can always choose to go back to work, but you just lose your PERS benefits.
No.
Yeah, there's an amount per year that you can earn, and as a public employee, and still get your retirement. But does it have to do with hours or amounts?
600 hours.
600 hours.
Like
it allows people
then.
To substitute teach and that type
right.
of thing.
Like Social Security.
His question is,
yeah.
You go back to work completely. You just go completely back to work.
You go completely back to work, you start losing your benefits. You lose your benefits.
That's the question.
Not on a permanent basis, though, is it?
Well, not you don't. As long as you go back to work,
for that length of time, you lose them. And then when you get, when you're no longer working the hours over 600 or whatever the amount is, there was an attempt to change that to 1,000 in this committee, but I don't think we did that, did we?
No, we didn't.
Well, I appreciate those answers. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Hayden?
You can't retire from the state and then go to work for somebody else and still continue to get your state pension?
No, another public employee.
Another public employee.
Employer.
Yeah. Somebody
employer.
You can't go
under PERS. You can't. Okay, you can't be drawing pension from PERS and working full-time for a PERS.
That's correct.
Or you can go become a postman and work for the federal government,
yeah,
as far as I
know. But not PERS.
But okay. Not state employee or local government.
Yeah. Representative Mannix?
Presently, members of the Legislative Assembly who had no previous public employment, as I understand it, if they served long enough, they could be eligible for benefits as legislators under PERS.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if they don't serve long enough, they might have some very minimal benefits. They'd have to wait till their retirement years hence. Is that right?
Well,
there'd be some benefit, but it'd be...
I think after 8 years, I figured it out. It's around $120 a year. I mean, a month.
But you still have to meet the vesting requirements.
Right.
Do you, in terms of electing to maintain your coverage under SEV, do legislators who had no previous public employment other than as legislators have that 60-day option?
If they retire...
All right.
Do.
If they retire.
Not just leaving the Legislative Assembly. You have to retire, and then you have 60 days.
All right.
According to current law.
So what I was trying to get at then is the loophole that we're plugging has to do with someone who had done the election, then they went into legislative service.
Uh-uh.
No.
No. They are a legislator, and they elect to retire while a legislator.
While
they We're the only
no, okay.
people that can retire... while we're still public employees.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Now I understand. Thank you.
This is an employment.
The left side needed help this morning.
I'm so proud of the right side. Okay.
Somebody needs to move this. If we're.
I thought we had a motion to move
we
this.
We did. Representative Dominey.
Okay.
Dominey had moved the dash one. We were under discussion. Is there any objection to the dash one amendments? Hearing that, so ordered. Dash two?
The dash two amendments.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I want to commend my colleagues for having the courage to join me in confusion.
I even understand. And now, Representative Hayden? This does get confusing.
Put me in a dentist office and I'm shot, Mr. Chairman. With Novocaine.
The dash two amendments deal with page 20.
Okay.
And Representative Witte understands this better than I do.
In 1987, those of you that were, for the three of us that were on the committee at that time, we put in the Medicare supplement. The Medicare supplement, which had an eight-year requirement, you had to have served 8 years as a public employee in order to be eligible for the Medicare supplement. However, what we didn't say was whether or not the six-month probationary period that some public employees serve, we don't serve it as legislators. But if you go into other public employment, you have a six-month probationary period during which there's no PERS. Paid in for you, nor is any deducted from your salary. And so then after the 6 month, if you're going to be a permanent employee, then you start becoming a member of the system. However, we allow that 6 month to be bought back. That's in statute now. Or any 6 month period may be bought back that's in statute now. However, the statute does not allow that 6 month probationary period to be counted in the 8 years to make you eligible for the Medicare supplement. What this amendment does, it says that all your public employee service counts to the 8 years, including the probationary period.
For the purposes
it,
of...
It clarifies that, for the purposes of the Medicare supplement.
Of the supplement.
It doesn't give anybody public employee service that they haven't actually earned. It just says that that probationary period counts in figuring the 8 years as it should count. That's all it does.
Okay. Representative Witte moves the dash two amendments. Is there any further discussion on those?
Wish I didn't understand this so well.
You're doing
I have
great.
Other things in my brain to put in there besides this stuff.
You're our resident expert. Is there any objection to the dash two amendments? Hearing none, so ordered. Dash three.
The dash three amendments on page three. I spoke to it earlier as far as the no alien on training or educational visa and the reasons for that. This first language here changes the wording around to make it more readable, mainly, and to get things in the right perspective. And in line 31 through 38 is the concern about restoring the bracket material and deleting the boldface material regarding volunteer firefighters' length of service award program.
That we've talked about.
This is the amendments that Representative Johnson wanted to make sure we had.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Mannix.
I move the dash three amendments.
Representative Mannix moves the dash three amendments. Any discussion? Is there any objection to those? Hearing none, dash three are adopted.
And the dash four amendments submitted by Higher Education, they have some of their people in a different, not in PERS, but in a different pension plan. And when the state was allowed to start picking up the employee share of PERS, they started picking up the employee share of that plan, that pension plan. Then the AG said, I'm not sure you have the authority to do that. This particular bill would give them the authority to do something that they are doing.
Yeah. Is it that was negotiated, wasn't it?
I'm sure it was.
Yeah. Probably. I'm pretty sure that it was negotiated. That pickup, and then they found out that what they negotiated wasn't legal, or at least the Attorney General thought that it probably wasn't. Every other public employee that negotiated the pickup is legal, except apparently this higher ed thing. So this makes it legal.
They have a separate pension program?
The facts are that the employers are already paying the pickup.
Yeah.
We need this little thing here. Or else they got to quit doing it.
Yeah, I think the testimony, Mr. Chair, was if we don't do this, they're going to be illegal, so they're asking us to please do it. I think that was what the testimony was.
That was kind of what it was, Mr. Chairman.
We've had several bills like that this session. Representative Gertley, we talked about this earlier.
Okay.
I think there's members of the Attorney General's staff over there, Mr. Chairman, that have nothing better to do than to find these things.
I guess apparently. So. Well, we want to stay legal.
I guess so.
Well, I'd move the dash four amendments.
Representative Domini moves the dash four amendments. Any further discussion? Is there any objection to these dash four amendments? So, okay. Is that the extent of the amendments?
That's the extent of the amendments, although I want to bring your attention to the page 10, the as that I suggested on line 28 instead of A, and then on page 11, line 41, where it says payable, the sub would like to put if elected under.
Could you state that for the record now, Max?
On page 11, line 41, it says plus the monthly amount payable, and we want plus the monthly amount if elected under that. It's an election.
Because they have an option, Mr. Chairman.
They have an option.
As to whether to take the annual lump sum.
No, I'm not talking about the policy.
Take out payable and put
delete,
in.
We'll be deleting.
Delete payable.
Okay.
Insert if elected.
That's what
Pardon
I was
looking.
There we go.
Okay. Representative Witte moves it on page 10, line 28. The printing error, A should say, as such monthly payments. Add an S after A, as. And on page 11, line 41, delete payable and insert if elected.
Any discussion? Any objection to that, Lena? So ordered. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the bill as amended.
Okay, where's this going, Matt?
This goes to, has a subsequent...
While I was out, did we get rid of that section 7?
Yes, we did. Well, we took the amendments that PERS had proposed, we're back to...
Which took care of that section, subsection 7 then.
Right, back the new language was deleted.
Okay.
Does this have a subsequent referral?
Yes, it does.
Okay, the motion, Representative Dominey, moves House Bill 2049 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means with the due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dominey? I was just looking at this, and it doesn't show any impact.
Well,
it does. What happened?
I don't do the referrals in the office downstairs. There can't be very much fiscal impact.
Well, there, Mr. Chairman, if I can, I think the volunteer fireman thing that we put back in as was and there's no change was the reason for that. Because, see, what that did, Mr. Chairman, if we change that to the printed, to the bold language, which we didn't do,
was a substantial.
Then there was a substantial fiscal impact.
Okay.
And I.